This week's show has no paid subscribers, so please go to thedadpodcast.com and click on the link to become a paid subscriber for just $24 a year. You could change my life. Thank you and enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast, episode 83. We are back again with our long-lost friend, Dr. J, the pediatrician. How are you, Dr. J?
I'm doing great, Justin. How are things out in sunny California?
They are very sunny, which I'm sure is very frustrating to you being on the East Coast. We were talking a little bit before we fired up the mics about the bullshit of weather you guys have been experiencing out there, and I think the people that are really probably the most frustrated, because I feel like you're in the Northeast, so you get hit with winter. But the people in the Southeast are like, what the fuck is going on? This is insane.
They're ill-prepared for this crap.
Yeah. But I thought it was interesting that, because you said that it sucks for you, because as a pediatrician, you like, just like anybody who calls to get an appointment, a lot of times, you know, if you're sick, you're a little frustrated because you're like, the next appointment is available a week away or 2 weeks away. But you have like wellness visits, like, because I remember with my guys, especially when they're babies, you come once a month, and then it's once every 3 months, like through the first year. Right.
Right. Those are scheduled.
Right.
And if I have to cancel those, I got to find a place to squeeze them in. But I'm always amazed at the parents that will, you know, find their way out of the house in a foot and a half of snow if they've been up all night with a screaming kid and an ear infection. So those SUVs are made for this kind of weather.
They go get. Are you saying that they usually do not do that if it is just, hey, we're going to take his temperature and see if he can hear? Then they're like, oh, it's snowing. I don't want to risk it. But if.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there are people that cancel 2 days before a scheduled snowstorm. Before the first flake has fallen, these people cancel. So,
oh man, so much stuff to talk about. We have a question, and I want to get to that briefly. But I don't know. This may be unfair of you. I know that you have been hit not only on this show but in life in general with a lot of unfair expectations of parents coming to you for an answer.
Yeah,
but. Why is it that is there a clinical study? And if not, I would like to create a Kickstarter to fund this study as to why it is that my children cannot eat the meals that are prepared for them. Why is it that when you put a meal in front of a child, no matter if it's even what they have fucking asked for, that it is still not prepared to their liking and their preference?
Well, you know, the problem is that we let them. John Roseman had a good article, maybe a month ago in the he's a parenting expert from, I don't know, one of the Carolinas. And he had a great article on stop picky eaters in three steps. And basically, he says, you fix the picky eater what you want him to eat for dinner. If he doesn't eat it, you wrap it up or throw it out. He doesn't get anything in between. And if he doesn't eat anything all day, he'll be hungry the next day.
See, I'm a huge proponent of this plan. I think that this does not fly well with the moms, I'm guessing, or most moms. But
his idea is, you know, you make your evening meal and you don't even consider what the hell the kid wants to eat. And you put a little bit, maybe a teaspoon of everything you make on his plate. And he's got to eat everything, you know, those three or four teaspoons of whatever it is. And then when he wants seconds, he can load the plate up on what he likes. But if he doesn't eat everything on his plate, He doesn't get anything.
I love this. I like that I brought this up just as a way of getting it off my chest. And you fucking genius, you. You've literally solved my problem in less than 5 minutes.
Yeah, his Roseman's website, it's good. It's called parentguru.com.
And is he a parent guru because he's just a no-nonsense guy? Like, I imagine him to be like a dock worker, really. Like, you know, like more of a grandfather even. Like, I fought in the war. And
this is what he says. He says, it might take a week or two and a lot of complaining, but he'll eventually begin eating green things, weird tasting things, and you know, you just got to stick to your guns. That's all.
Yeah, because I made as a treat for my sons, like they'd had waffles like 2-3 days ago, and so you know, I like to sometimes offer them a choice, you know. So I'll say this morning, I go, hey, what would you guys like for breakfast? And my younger son goes, waffles. I go, well, we're out of waffles. And he's like, oh. And I go, but I can make you toast or something. He's like, okay. And so I was like, you know what? It'd be good. I could whip up some Bisquick waffle mix real quick. So I do it. I make the waffles for the older boy. I set it down. Or he sees me making it, and he says, can I have cinnamon on mine? And I put – what I do with the Bisquick is I put about a teaspoon of vanilla extract, and I put a little – maybe another teaspoon of cinnamon just to add a little more flavor to it.
Very nice.
And so I go, well, there's cinnamon in it, but are you saying you want cinnamon and sugar? Because he went through a phase where he didn't like syrup. He just wanted some cinnamon sugar on top of it.
Right.
And I said, do you want on top? And I go, because there's cinnamon in it. He goes, oh, then okay, I'll just take it in it. So then I set it down, and he goes, I can't taste the cinnamon. And I go, well, it's just like a – It's a seasoning, son. It's not a cinnamon donut. It's not
right,
like,
right, right.
And he goes, well, can I have cinnamon? And in my tired brain, I thought that he wanted cinnamon and sugar on top of the waffle to then stab with his fork and then dip it in the tablespoon of syrup that he has over there. And I go, no, that's too much sugar. Well, as of course, anytime I say no, you know, then it's tears. There are tears gushing from the face, like, how dare you, you horrible father. And then,
right.
Because I'm an idiot, I immediately go into some rant. I say, you know, I can't believe that I'm making you something nice that and this is what I get. This is what I get.
Did you jack him up, Justin? Did you jack him up against the wall?
No. I thought about it. I've had fantasies. I know you're a mandated reporter. I also know you're a mandated reporter, so I'm not going to do anything to incriminate myself. But
not in California, though.
Oh, good. Then I'm safe. I beat the living shit. No, come and get me, Connecticut coppers. It's a lot of screaming, which is another interesting thing that, to me, screaming, this is about the tone that I'm using when I'm screaming, what you're hearing right now.
Right.
And that is also met with abuse. Like, it's like I might as well be putting cigarettes out on them. it's a frustrating week for me as a father, I think. Because last night it was, I made these delicious meatballs that they love. They, in fact, for a while they were making them with me, but he wanted to, and this is the bullshit of toddler lives today. He wanted to play Skylander Giants. He was playing a Skylander Giants game while I was making dinner. I'm like, that's fine. It's going to make it easier for me to make dinner. You're entertained. Everybody wins. I put the meatballs out there. He's like, I don't like them. Both of them. I don't like them. And then you do the dance of, you know, although now that I've had this Roseman theory, I'm not going to be doing any kind of dancing anymore. You do this dance back and forth. Of trying to coax him into doing it. And then my wife comes in and goes, okay, you've had 3 or 4 bites of meat. Who wants a treat? Like, gee. And then it's like, then they down a half a pound of chocolate. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? This is not how this is supposed to go down. So go ahead. I'm sorry. I keep talking.
No, I agree. And like I said, if you give them the meatball and some vegetables and stuff, and they finish what you give them, they can have more food, or then they can have something they want, but they don't finish their plate. You know, that's the rule.
Well, that's what I did. This rant was then extended beyond my children to my whole household. I did what a lot of fathers, I think, sometimes do when they hit their limit. They go, all right, new rule, like Moses with the commandments. I come in and I go, there will be no more large portions of anything. I say there will be like no larger than their fist, like their hand of each thing that we're making. And so in a sense, I stumbled upon what Roseman's saying. I'm like, just a little bit of everything. And when they eat all that, they can have more or a treat. But that's right. It. No more of this bullshit of having 2 or 3 bites of a meatball and then having a half a box of See's candy. Those days are fucking gone. I'm through with it. And,
sounds like you've seen the light.
Now
you have two kids that do. Have you ever had the situation where they wanted like a, you know, ice cream or something, and you know that they are examining the contents of each bowl, and you're consciously trying to make them as even and equal as possible.
Yes.
And then somebody bitches about an extra sprinkle or something on the other one sundae.
Yes. Yes.
You throw both those sundaes in the fucking garbage. That's what you do when that comes up. Okay.
Okay.
any bitching or moaning about it's not fair, he got more than me, you just throw them both the fuck away.
Now, here's the thing. I laugh for two reasons. Reason number one is because I could not agree with you more. I would love nothing more than to be that hard-nosed father. I feel like that's how you raise a generation that can win a world fucking war again.
Right.
You know what I mean? That you just go, oh, you don't like it? Oh, well, fuck you. Like,
well, I have parents that say their kids, you know, they undo their car seat and try to get out of the car seat. Well, oh. I tell them, listen, you plan a trip somewhere they want to go, like Chuck E. Cheese or something.
Yeah.
And as you're going and the little cocksucker gets out of the car seat, you turn your ass around and you go home.
Right.
That'll right. learn them.
And it's funny. I mean, here's the thing. Just so I can be completely fair and honest about myself is that I have a lot of these thoughts when I'm talking to you in the room that is acoustically lined to where it's almost like a Zen palace in here. But when I'm in the middle of their screaming and crying and, you know, and all that stuff, like you start to – it weighs on your nerves and it's hard for you to think clearly and consciously in that given moment. So I can understand.
Let me ask you a question.
I'm ready.
Are you concerned about the – screaming and crying or the child, or are you worried more about the judgment by your wife because of the screaming and of the child?
In my situation, I am annoyed by the screaming and crying from the children. I don't care about what my wife and I are enough on the same page that I don't care what she thinks. She's not going to come at me. She knows, like, she's not going to come at me and go, listen, you're kind of, you know, you're being a dick, which is a story because it's been so long since you and I have talked, due right. to mostly my fault. A famous story that has come up on this show is that my mother-in-law spent a week with us here. And when my mother-in-law comes to town and visits, she spends 8 hours a day with me because my wife works. So she's it's really visiting with the person I hate the most in the world. For me, it's like some kind of weird cosmic punishment. And the whole time, Justin, you're so amazing. Oh, Natalie's so lucky to have a husband who could change diapers and cook and clean and take care of the kids. Oh, you're so great. You're so great. You're so great. And then we went to go visit them, and she said to Natalie, no, my wife told me wisely, as we were beginning a 5-hour car trip to go see my in-laws, she said, hey, my mom brought up and said that while she was here, she thought that you yelled at the kids a lot. And I said, and my wife said, I go, well, what did you tell her? She goes, well, I said that you were going through a lot because we just bought a house and you were still managing the building at the time. I go, no bullshit. I yell at my children because they are assholes. That right. is why I yell at my children. If they're not being assholes, I sing their praises. I hug
That's
them.
That's what you have to do.
I kiss them. But if you're being an asshole, I treat you accordingly because I feel it is my obligation as a human being to not allow them to unleash that assholeness onto the rest of the world.
Right. Then you are included in that world.
Exactly. That means, and that's what I'm doing. I'm doing it as a way of paying it forward in hopes that there are other parents equally reducing the amount of assholes in the world coming at me and my yeah. children.
And good luck with that thought.
And so that was the whole thing. My wife, however, she knows that, you know, she sees me have moments and she'll kind of put her signal is like put an arm on my shoulder or something like, okay, all right, let's take it down a notch a little bit, you know. But for the most part, we're both like, fucking hell, knock it off. And we look at them, and I even said to my wife last night about the meatball fiasco of 2014, where I go, am I crazy? Do they not do I only think they taste good because I made them? Because I feel like our parents made us eat some shitty stuff that was not really good food. Like, this is really good food that is also kid good. It's not like right. I'm asking them to eat halibut covered in caviar or anything that is complex for an adult palate. No, it's fucking meatballs and marinara and noodles. With some carrots on the side.
My biggest problem as a child was beets.
Oh, man.
My mother would force the beets on me. And, you know, my kids are almost 21, almost 23. They don't know what a fucking beet is. I don't think they've ever seen one.
And isn't it frustrating, though? I'm sure there was something. You know, there's still – I imagine that 80 years from now, children are going to be complaining about Oreos or Chips Ahoy cookies, that they will only enjoy Pepperidge Farm. You know what I mean? Like, even the sweets will have some kind of degradation that is
no good. I hate watermelon. It doesn't have seeds anymore.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? I can't eat this shit. Oh, my God. It is so fucking aggravating.
They can't even grab a container and a spoon of yogurt. They've got to slurp it out of a sleeve now.
Yes, it's a tube.
You know, I mean, it's almost like birds feeding their young, you know, chewing yeah. it up and then just dispensing it in liquefied form to their offspring.
It's funny that you bring that up because that is a tongue-biting moment for me. That also happened this morning. I gave my son a waffle, and then I gave him one of the yogurts. And the yogurts that we have is just that little tube thing you're describing. And he was putting it into his mouth and eating it like it's a gigantic straw and still somehow managed to miss his mouth and make a mess. I didn't see exactly how it happened. I just knew that he goes, oh, and he had yogurt all over his hands. Like, what are you? And it took everything in me not to go, what the fuck are you doing that you can't just let it fall into your mouth? Like, there's no utensil. It's literally a direct pipeline into your gullet, and you can't make that connection? Like, what's going on?
Next thing you know, the tubes are going to be longer, and you're going to have to insert them right down through the esophagus into the stomach directly, and then just squeeze the yogurt in, almost like a feeding tube.
I can't wait when they perform a tracheotomy on the Trix Rabbit in the cartoons for the commercials for it.
Have you seen the commercial for Go-Gurt with the father and the obnoxious kids leaving messages all over the kitchen? Don't forget the Go-Gurt. Here's this poor bastard who's probably divorced now. That's why he's making the lunches, right? He's got a fuckload of stuff going on. He's got freaking sticky notes all over his goddamn kitchen to remind him to give the Go-Gurt in the lunch, you know?
Yes.
I feel sorry for this poor bastard.
Yeah, no. And could you imagine? I know that there's a little bit of an age difference between you and I, but could you imagine us doing that for our fathers? It would be a shoot. Just like you said, I didn't get enough sprinkles, and just sweeping it into the trash. It would be like my father would beat the living fuck out of me if I said, hey, don't forget to go the Go-Gurt. Like, that's a shoo-in. I will never see Go-Gurt again.
That's a ticket to a beating.
Yes. Just for asking for something, like, which is also,
I remember that's how we took our sugar as kids, the Go-Gurt technology, Pixie sticks.
Yes.
Were direct sugar right into your body.
Oh, remember those giant ones too? Oh my gosh.
Great.
I remember buying those and feeling like that was like mainlining heroin. If you were in elementary school, like, it almost seemed like it should be illegal that I was eating flavored sugar, like sweetened sugar out of a straw that was taller than me.
Like a cup of sugar, just mainlining a cup of sugar.
And sometimes, like, how there's a reason, I think, like, how the fact that there weren't more people that had some kind of, like, pixie lung, you know what I mean? Like a coal miner gets black lung. Like,
true.
How you don't let that pour in and then go, like, just in happiness, gasp it in, and then it just lines, you know, your breathing mechanism.
I guess the body can handle aspirated sugar.
What happens? I mean, now, since you actually, like, say I do inhale some sugar, does it just turn into like a mucus and it works its way out, or does it live forever?
I imagine. How the hell do I know? Yeah, probably. I know they have something called popcorn lung now. People who microwave their popcorn, and then when they open it up, they take that big breath in to breathe in the good smell of the hot popcorn. Apparently, that can put holes in your lungs.
Really?
Yeah.
That is insane. That is so weird to me. Like, how? I don't even know why that would be.
I don't know.
That's going to really suck ass when we find out, like, you know, all these things that nobody, like, you know, like leeches were in the Renaissance. That was medicine.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's got to be something that we're doing now that we're completely unaware of. I don't know. I don't think that's, maybe you obviously would know better than me. I don't think there's anything medically that we could be doing now that, you know, 20 years we're going to go, well, we were killing people when we do that. But I think, like, what you discussed, like things like microwave popcorn, there's probably some kind of issue with Go-Gurt and stuff like that, you know? They didn't even, I feel like the only yogurt we had was yogurt that had fruit in it. That was it. Now they have deliciously flavored yogurt, and I don't know, but I feel like people are encouraged to give their kids yogurt, and it seems like it's just sugar.
Well, it's Jamie Lee Curtis and her colonic problems that have created this need for yogurt.
So when I give my kids a Go-Gurt, I'm really just instilling in them the ability to be a regular middle-aged woman is what I'm
right. Yeah. You know, and I think about, you know, how hot she looked in that black dress in that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
True Lies. Yes.
True Lies. Right. And now I got to deal with her sitting on the bowl 4 or 5 times a day, having regular bowel movements. It destroys a teen's vision of a beautiful woman. I'll tell you that much.
It almost makes it impossible to masturbate to her. Almost. Yep.
Unbelievable.
It almost completely disconnects. Well, what?
And nobody likes yogurt. I mean, I when I'm sitting there eating a yogurt, I feel like it's a form of corporal punishment, because anyone that's sitting there eating a yogurt would rather have a bowl of fucking ice cream, except that you're a fat shit and you got to eat the yogurt. So it's your own goddamn fault.
Right. That and I like that, too, that, you know, all the commercials of, like, you know, the Boston cream pie and, you know, how it's just like a dessert. No, it's not.
We used to eat a Boston cream pie.
Yeah. Now you just get to have the Yoplait version.
Yeah.
Well, you're regular, and that's what really matters. I also wanted to ask you, I almost forgot, because since we last talked, you went on a fantastic vacation. I know this is back in, like, October, wasn't it?
Right. Yeah. Well, it's as close to a vacation as I've had in the last 4 years. So
that's what I was curious about. Yeah. Like, what's it like when you're a pediatrician who has people who call you all the time for things, and then you decide to take a week off or however long it was?
Yeah, I went to the Atlantis in the Bahamas for actually a pediatric conference so that I could get the office to pay for it.
Nice.
Because since the divorce, money's been a little scarce. And it was good because I got to combine banana daiquiris, sitting in the sun, pediatrics, and I got a couple of guest spots at the comedy club down there. So it all worked out really well.
Right on. That's awesome. What do they cover at a pediatrics conference?
This was on pediatric emergencies, so it was a lot of things that kids come into the ER with and stuff like that. So it was pretty good. I learned that a new parent in the first 12 months of their newborn baby's lives will lose out on 750 hours of sleep. I found that to be an interesting little tidbit I pulled from that.
Yeah, that is 750 hours of sleep, and that's in a sense saying the average person sleeping 6 to 8 hours. So in the first year, you would lose 750 hours of that 6 to 8 hours.
Exactly.
Wow.
Pretty profound. Yeah. And yet people go on to have second and third children. So there's something.
That's the next conference I want to have happen in the Bahamas, is what chemical reaction makes us dumb enough to where we go, hey, I think I could do this again. Like,
we have short memories.
Yeah, you completely forget. You forget everything you just did and go, why would I do this again?
No one realizes what having a newborn at home is like, because we forget the first 2 months of having him because we're so fucking sleep deprived that then you bring a new baby home from the hospital, the second one. The first night they wake up screaming at 1 a.m, you say, why the fuck did we do this?
We're so well engineered. Well, what is the thing that, because here's the thing, I don't know if it's the comedian in me, but I feel like 99% of the things that a child goes into the ER would be things in the nose, things that were swallowed, foreign objects like that, and maybe like a stuffy nose. Like, I feel, and I don't know, but I feel like the emergency for a young child is pretty few and far between, where it's like, we got to save this child now, like get him into a bin of ice to get the fever down. Like, I feel like it's mostly just common stuff. Am I wrong?
Usually. I mean, but there are things that come up. There are kids that, you know, have bad asthma and peanut allergies and appendicitis and stuff like that that comes out of left field. But I remember when I was a resident at Hartford Hospital, kids would, you know, come to the emergency room by ambulance for diarrhea. So, I mean, it's a crazy, crazy world.
Why would they? Is that just in that situation? Like, if somebody calls 911 and says my kid has diarrhea, do you have to go just to be safe?
Yeah. They have to take them. And in fact, I remember one mom asking when I was done treating her child in the ER if they could use the ambulance to get a ride back home. Again, I'm not sure that they're all that aware of what the system is. But
you guys don't have a call where you're going back by Oakwood? Because that's like 2 blocks from my house. You could drop me off within a couple blocks.
I could wait till my neighbor calls in to be transported by ambulance for her mosquito bite and then catch a ride back with you if you want.
Is that cool? Is that all right?
It's crazy. But one person, you know, and then I have people that under-call what's going on with their kids. And then I have kids come in who are really sick. So I don't know. We're all doing the best we can with the limited resources out there.
Yeah.
Thank God for Google and WebMD, huh?
No, those are your favorite websites.
Yeah.
You have them homepaged, I bet, on two separate browsers just so you can always check in. And
I came to the conclusion the other day after 20 years of having the discussion with parents about whether it's safe to immunize their children or not. But I have to draw a line in the sand. I mean, I'll have the conversation, but not with a woman who refers to her son's belly button as his umbilical cord. I'm not going to have that conversation.
You can't argue with me, ma'am. You can't.
I'm sorry. You just.
And, I had something similar.
And honestly, my new theory is this. You know, I think we've proven time and time again that vaccines do not cause autism. I think vaccines have an effect on autism. I think they allow the weaker ones to live long enough to show the symptoms.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
That's what I'm thinking.
You know, and it's funny that you brought this up because...
When's the last time you heard of crib death? I've been a pediatrician for 20 years, Justin. In the 70s, it happened every other week, okay?
Right. SIDS was like a whole thing, right? Like
it was, but nothing now. Nothing now.
And so the clinical theory would be vaccinations have helped the genetically weaker children survive those situations that otherwise could not be explained.
That's right, and that's why we have lots of asthma and peanut allergies and everything
because
else.
A weaker child is actually able to overcome their genetic weakness and enjoy a full life.
That's exactly right.
Without peanuts, but which is still could be a full life to some people.
Can't go to the circus.
Nope.
Can't go to ball games.
Nope. Well, I actually have a question that's kind of on a serious note in the same regard, was that last week I had some parents who found out that their son was diagnosed Asperger's, and she had feelings about this. Like, she didn't know exactly what it was. She just knew something wasn't right, even when her son was a baby. And one of the things, she went to her pediatrician, and she actually saw them making the note on the file that said, hysterical first-time mom, is what the pediatrician wrote.
Now, is there a diagnosis code for that? Because I haven't used it. I would.
You might want to call your coder and see how you bill insurance for that.
Yeah, maybe.
here's the thing. I know that you are a straight shooting, you know, guy, especially on this show. This is, I think, almost as cathartic as it is for me to do it as well.
Yes, I agree with that.
I'm sure that you have these hysterical first-time moms. And when I heard that, obviously I didn't say it to her in that moment, but because it didn't work out that way. But I feel like this would be a pretty common kind of assumption that it's just part of the doing what you do for many years.
There, you know what? There are quirky kids out there. And when we were younger, there were quirky kids too, you know? I mean, I've probably got a little, you know, schmeckle of the Asperger's too. I mean, in eighth grade, I remember trying to come up with a probability system for Hi-Li with my algebra teacher. I mean, that's not normal behavior. So I think we all carry with us a little bit of quirkiness. And, you know, now we just have names to put on it, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of kids with Asperger's are, you know, high-functioning autistic kids that don't really show signs or symptoms of it until they're older than the, you know, the classic autistic kid that, you know, isn't talking, doesn't socialize, things like that. So sometimes the diagnosis is made a little later, but I don't think in cases like that those kids are any worse off, you know, whether the diagnosis was made when they were in kindergarten or when they were in sixth grade.
Right. Well, and I agree wholeheartedly in that my therapist actually said something to my wife about this, and that he said that children are incredibly adaptive to to a flaw in most cases. Like, even a child that is abused will just adapt to it mentally. And so, but in this case, what is hard is that the mom is the one dealing with the stress and anxiety, whereas the child is probably, for the most part, unaware of it, just seems like a pain that, this is kind of a hassle, but they don't even know what a hassle is. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
right.
And so that's what I felt bad. My heart went out to her in that situation where she's looking, and I think in a lot of ways it's an unfair position for you guys as pediatricians to be put in, where it's like you almost have to be the savior and end all, know all, be all. That if somebody comes to you and says, "Help me, please," and then at the same time you're also a person who can look at it and go, "I think you're just being overbearing and weirding out about it unnecessarily."
Right.
And I guess the only really lesson that could come out of it is that's why they have second opinions. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's one thing that, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, doctors that you know, because of managed care and stuff, restrict patients from getting second opinions and things like that. And if I had a parent in my practice that was ever, you know, worried about something like, does my child have Asperger's, I would always point them in the right direction to find someone to get the answer. You know, I don't like to pretend like I know everything, but I do know where to, you know, refer people when I don't know everything, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that's hard too. I mean, if she literally saw a hysterical first time parent on the medical record, that's really a,
it was a note that she saw the doctor writing, which I was mostly impressed that she could read the doctor's handwriting. That's what I thought was the interesting thing, but that she saw him writing it on the notes in the file that the doctor was holding. And so and it's interesting because that's what I thought too, that it, in a lot of ways, those medical records will eventually be found, and that it could be, you know, that could be some form of, obviously not a public record, but it could easily get back to something. But I can understand.
Or in a lawsuit or something.
Right.
You don't want to write any little humorous anecdotes in the
in the
medical record.
No,
keep your opinions to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, we used to put HPRAW down, hysterical Puerto Rican adolescent woman, you know, those things can come back to haunt.
So you have you could create a shorthand and
shorthand, sure.
And as long as you can, in a court of law, say that it stands for hyper potential against restrictive ways, like or something, then you're fine, right? Like,
right. Because you do know when the time when a woman is most fertile, right?
No.
15 in Puerto Rican.
Hey-o. Well, since we've said it too 8 times, this kind of hit me is, where did they come up with the name Asperger's? Because it seems like the worst name for a disease. It seems like a third grader came up as an insult. Asperger? Or am
it's
I saying
probably
it right?
Named after Dr. Asperger, who probably had his ass kicked in middle school. So
all the time for being an Asperger.
Like, you know,
I'll take my Asperger with cheese. You shut your faces.
Oh, I don't know. And it is but you know, and like yesterday, I had the most pleasant 3-year-old kid I did a checkup on yesterday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the kids are great. I mean, they really are. Most of them are great. But then I had to, you know, take an 11-year-old down to the floor to give him his freaking meningitis shot last week. So
wow.
I almost had to put him in a sleeper hold and say, don't fight it. Don't fight it. Easy now. Easy.
Yeah, see, that was another thing. It's so funny that you keep naturally leading me into the kind of the things.
He locked himself in my patient. He ran from an exam room in his underwear and socks and locked himself in my patient bathroom in the waiting room last week.
At 11?
At 11.
Wow, that's rough. That is.
But it is tough. And I felt bad for him because, you know, he's a nervous kid.
Right.
And I get that. And his father was trying to get him out of the bathroom. And finally, I just went out there and I said, buddy, I got a line of kids here with cups that need to use the bathroom. And the kid just unlocked the door right away and came right back to the room. And then, you know, 20 minutes dancing around the fact that he has to get a shot. And finally, it was time for it. And I just had to bring in there's a reason I have a male medical assistant in my office.
he's the enforcer.
He's the enforcer.
Well, that because I deal with this whenever my son gets any kind of a cold symptom or anything. My 5-year-old. So here's the thing: I have permission from my pediatrician to give like a half dose of a decongestant to my 2-year-old because she explained to me that the reason why they don't want kids under 6 taking the decongestant is because their sinuses are so small, and right. that parents were giving them the medicine, but because they didn't see a result, they would give them more of a different kind of a medicine and almost OD them on cold medicine.
Right.
So she said, as long as you give him one dose, and if it doesn't work, you don't give him any more until it's or anything different until 5 hours or whatever it says on the bottle. She goes, right. You'll be fine with a half dose based on his weight, you know? And so I use the Mucinex, the cold Mucinex, and oh my gosh, it works like a charm. I mean, this they could take a cold, and if I give my 2-year-old Mucinex, he's got it. He's moved on in sometimes just 2 days tops.
Yeah.
Because it just gets him to sleep, and as long as I keep, you know, cramming fluids in him, then he gets better really quick.
Yeah, if we could put you know, kids into like 2-day comas just to recover from their cold, it'd probably be easier. There'd be a lot less whining. I know that.
It's true. And so he will take that, take the Mucinex and just be fine with it. He doesn't care. My 5-year-old, however, it is like just the smell of the medicine. He's vomited all over my floor so many times that it becomes this huge thing. And, you know, me being the father that I am, I'm trying to, you know, I try to push him and say, listen, I go, if you just think of, if I deal with this inconvenience for 10 seconds, I will feel better for 4 hours or 5 hours or 6 hours, and I'll be sick less, like less time overall. It's a minor inconvenience with this medicine. I go, it really works. And, you know, we worked out, there's a routine now that we have. It's a dog and fucking pony show. Yep, where
I know. And my older daughter, you know, when she got to chewables, she had to do like 4 chewables, and she'd break them into quarters, so there'd be like 16 pill fragments on the table. And 9 times out of 10, she'd be like on the 13th pill fragment and barf it all up. So
frustrating.
Yeah, it is. But that's why we need to get medicine in rectal suppository form.
Oh, I like that idea. I really like
Timmy has a choice. He can take a teaspoon of bubblegum flavored medicine or have a torpedo shoved up his ass.
I don't know, but I kind of think my son would rather take it up the keister than he would take it orally. Like he would, I'm going to say, listen, I'm going to just shove my finger up your ass. And he's going to look at me and go, do I have to taste it? I'm going to go, nope. And he's going to reach around. He's going to turn around and grab his ankles. He's like, go get him, Pop.
You're going to have to taste my finger when I'm done. That's what you're going to have to do.
I'm going to give you some E. coli, you son of a bitch. But yeah, I mean, and we've tried everything. Like, we put the medicine in with some Gatorade, and then I added, like, a tablespoon of sugar and sifted around. I tried it with, like, ice, like it's on the rocks. And then
I usually have you just give it to him, squirt it down, and then chase it with, a shot of chocolate syrup. That works. Well, get the medicine down, chocolate syrup, pudding, something that tastes good. Cool Whip takes all the little bitter taste off your tongue so it goes down.
I didn't think of Cool Whip. That's the one we haven't tried. We've tried chocolate syrup. I found it was too bitter. Like it didn't get rid of the sweetness of it fast enough. But also, it's not even just what goes in after him. It's all in his head, as I'm
right.
You know that it's ramping up, and it's just like the nervous kid you were dealing with at 11 who, you know, runs away. And so it's building up, and I keep having to explain to him. I said, listen, I go, this is your brain thinking it's protecting you, and it's not. I said, you have to be smarter than your own brain and just tell yourself, I just got to swallow it. Just keep thinking, swallow, swallow, swallow. Because what he'll do, he has a cup of like a juice or water or soda, something sweet that can push it down. And so he'll take it in his mouth, and then he looks down, or we try to keep him to keep his head up, but he doesn't swallow it. He uses the fluid to push it down, which makes it sit in his mouth a little bit longer. And I try to explain, well, no, just get it in your gullet. And it's just, I mean, I know that there are other parents going, you know, going through this whole thing, and I'll try the Cool Whip thing, but it's just like, I do it's such an asshole move, but I'm like, do you realize that we didn't even have flavor in our medicine? Like,
that's right. I could still taste penicillin in my mouth.
I took like whatever, I think it's like codeine cough syrup almost every day when I was a kid. I had chronic bronchitis until I was about 6 years old. And every other day I just don't remember. That's the other sad part about it, is that I was so young. I also don't remember putting up that much of a fight with my father. And I wish I could relate. I wish I could empathize with him more. But I'm like, all I keep thinking is like, just choke it down. Because that's what I remember thinking. I'm like, it doesn't taste good. And he keeps saying, it doesn't taste good. I go, it's medicine. It's never going to taste good. Like, anything that is good for you does not taste good. And that is the problem with the world that we live in. Like,
that's right.
You know, and I feel like sometimes it almost makes it worse that they put that berry flavoring in it or whatever. Because I think it creates more of a contrast between the sweet berry and the flavor of the medicine. And,
right. It's horrible. I remember Augmentin used to be banana coconut, which is quite horrible. Uh-huh. And then they switched to orange raspberry, and their ad campaign, they gave pediatricians lollipops of the orange raspberry flavor of the new Augmentin. Uh-huh. I would find these things stuck to chairs, thrown into the parking lot. It was the most horrible tasting combination of fruits you could ever imagine. So,
yeah, like, why is it? That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, why not make it? If you got orange, why not do like a 50-50 bar? Something that's even a little sweeter, put a cream flavor in there. Why orange raspberry?
Yeah, I don't know.
And why is it that medicine only comes in flavors that are grape and cherry and other wild berries? Like, there's grape, cherry, and wild berries.
My kids would never take medicine unless it was purple. So if I got, you know, the cough medicines, it always went with grape because it was purple. And if, God forbid, you got an antibiotic that was pink, you had to add a little blue food coloring to it to make it purple. And my kids would take it. So a little quirkiness, but it worked.
We are living the dream, my friend.
You know, I'll tell you, I'm a good dad, though, because my younger one, who's going to be 21 next month, Saturdays ago, she calls me from college, and she's got this horrible stomach bug. She's throwing up and diarrhea and everything, and she said, I just don't want to be down in my dorm. Can you come and pick me up? So I drove, you know, down to New Haven to get her, and she was smart enough to bring her bucket with her, and as we're driving up the Merritt Parkway, she's throwing up in her bucket, but sadly, she didn't bring a bucket for underneath her, and my 20-year-old shit herself right in the front seat of my car next to me, and being the good dad I am, all I did was roll down the windows and continue driving up the Merritt Parkway. I didn't say a word, so.
You didn't scream or lose your mind at her?
What can you do? What can you do?
I'm wired a little bit that way in that because my dad used to just lose his fucking mind whenever I would throw up. And I remember thinking, it's so weird that he expects me to know to make it to the toilet. Like, I remember, trust me, if I knew it was coming and knew what to look for, I would help you more. But I just don't know when it's happening. And and I remember thinking that as a kid. So whenever my kid's Ralph on the floor or something, it doesn't really bother me. But it does. I get frustrated when he gets like half the medicine down and then Ralphs it all back up.
Right. That's frustrating.
And it's such a hard thing, too, because I go through this thing where I'm pushing. And then if he Ralphs and everything and then say he chokes it down, then afterwards I feel really guilty about the pushing and the going, what are you doing? Like, you know, that kind of thing. And I don't know.
Maybe but when he gets a good night of sleep after taking his medicine, it makes it worth it, right?
Right. Well, and that, I keep my new philosophy or mantra.
And really, is it his good night of sleep that you're concerned about, Justin?
Yours?
No.
Honestly, in all honesty, I think that it's more his just because I know that he'll feel better faster. I really do feel strongly about that. And I'm not a guy who's really wired to need sleep that much. Although I've noticed since having children that if my sleep gets interrupted, even in the slightest way, like right now, we're still getting, the kids go down at about 7:30, 8-ish, you know, somewhere in there. Both of them are down. And my wife and I have about an hour and a half with each other just to visit or watch a show. And then we go to bed at 10, and my younger son is waking up at 6:30 now. He used to sleep until about 7:30, and I still haven't adjusted to that. So if I get, like, say I book a job or something that I have to work until 10 or 11 that night, and then I'm waking up at 6:30 next morning, even though it's only an hour, I have to be aware now of, like, okay, quit being a dickhead. It's just, you just got a little bit less sleep. But I don't really crave sleep. I don't sit there and go, I need to get some sleep. My wife, every day off, when the younger one takes a nap, she has to have a nap.
Listen, the minute I wake up in the morning, Justin, I'm already thinking about, when's the next time I can sleep?
I don't know. Maybe it's because I had a paper out. I had a paper out too,
but it was an afternoon edition.
Ah,
I was smart that way.
Nice. That was smart. I didn't have any choice in the matter. I just had
The one thing that gets me up, though, is most of my mornings start off going to see new babies at the hospital. So holding like a brand new, you know, just out of the oven baby in my arm every morning is usually enough to get me going for the day. It's kind
really?
Of, you know, it's a good way to wake up in the morning. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Seeing a fresh set of eyes, unlimited potential every morning. It's pretty cool.
Even this far into it, you still like you get a little charge out of it.
I was holding a little newborn kid just yesterday, and I get that feeling almost every time. Yeah.
Oh, man, that's cool. Good. Kudos for you, man. That's good.
Yeah.
I like it. Well, before we sit here and wax on and run out of time, we did have one email that was sent in a while ago. We emailed this person back because I didn't know when you and I would be able to record again. I didn't know that it was going to be 6 months later. But just for the edification of the audience, he says, first off, love the show. Been listening since just after the reboot with that other guy. He's talking about Bill Glass, my friend. I have three-year-old twins, boy and girl, and my wife is very sensitive about sleep and them sleeping through the night. She recently convinced me to start using a low dose of melatonin, 0.5 milligrams, to help them get to sleep and stay asleep. But the magic Google box says that melatonin isn't good for little kids. What do you think?
No, we use a lot of melatonin for kids. It doesn't work as well as Bourbon, but I figured I'd throw that out there. A half a milligram for a 3-year-old is fine. The dose, I mean, I think the dosages are for 6 and up, but it's 1 to 3 milligrams, whatever it is that that works. Yeah. And, you know, it's safe enough to use. I use Benadryl, too. I mean, Benadryl is basically Tylenol PM, which a lot of adults take for, you know, sleeping. Sometimes you have to reset the sleep clock a little bit. Kids get fucked up because they have a schedule during the week for 5 days when they're going to school. And then on Fridays and Saturdays, they stay up later. They sleep later on Saturday and Sunday morning. So trying to get them back on a regular sleep cycle for the school week is hard sometimes. Mm. And melatonin, Benadryl, those kind of things oftentimes are helpful. I wouldn't necessarily say it needs to be done every night, but if you do it every night for 3 or 4 nights in a row just to, you know, kind of reset the sleep clock, you know, it can be very effective.
And I would imagine it would be the same as like what we described earlier with the cold medicine, is that if 0.5 milligrams isn't doing the trick, that is not the go-ahead to do 0.75 milligram and then 1 milligram.
With older kids, you can, because the dose is 1 to 3 milligrams at bedtime. So you kind of have that little bit of
a but not for like a 3-year-old.
Not with a three-year-old.
And it all does come down to like body weight, right? Is that true? Just like when you get drunk at a bar, a guy who weighs 300 pounds is going to have to put back a few more than a guy who's, you know, 150 wet, you know?
Do you think midgets get drunker quicker?
That's what I heard the word on the street is. I mean, I don't know. I mean, like I said, you have
I have a collection of patients. I have over 5,000 patients. I am sad to say I do not have a midget.
You have no midget children.
In my
children.
Practice, I have no dwarves, no midgets,
no parent midgets.
No.
You know why?
No. I've got like one. If it was Noah's Ark, I'd have a pair of everything except midgets.
Here's my theory, and this is going to come across as incredibly insensitive, but I think it's because there is a utopic feel about Connecticut that they're like, again, I'm not saying that there's something wrong with midgets by any means. I'm just saying that
I don't even say, unless Brad Williams comes to the Funny Bone, I don't see midgets in my area.
He's your only experience with a midget. That's a solid experience, though. I've worked with that guy a couple times.
If you've ever seen a midget comedian give a woman a lap dance,
oh my gosh, yeah.
You have lived a life. That is some fun stuff.
If Mr. Williams is coming to your neighborhood, definitely go see that show. Yeah, both
he's
Dr.
a funny
James.
Guy.
Yeah, he's a cool
he's
guy.
A funny guy.
So it sounds like what you're saying, because that's the thing, is that a lot of people say Benadryl, like as an antihistamine. How does that make them drowsy, though? Like
the side effect is sleepiness with Benadryl. So, you know, the antihistamine part, you know, isn't as important as the sleepy side effect. Although there are kids, and, you know, I'd say it's probably close to 5 or 10% of kids who get wired on Benadryl. So you don't want to, you know, for the first time, give a dose of Benadryl at bedtime and find out that you've got one of those 10 percenters that's bouncing off the wall. So most kids get sleepy, though.
That's so. And the idea of being, because my thought process would be that if this was the case, I would have this fear of creating some kind of a dependence. Like, I'm wired in that, if like kind of like what we were talking about earlier with the food, that if you don't have anything to eat, eventually you will eat what's being given to you, and eventually you will get tired enough before you will just go to sleep. But it sounds like the real purpose behind using like a melatonin or a Benadryl is that you want to be able to also get you some sleep and make sure that they are getting well rested to get healthy or stay healthy.
Right.
Okay. That makes sense. That's pretty easy.
I remember my daughter standing at the top of the steps saying, "I can't sleep." And I would say, "You know what? The first problem is you're standing up. Sleep will not come if you're standing up at the top of the steps."
Yeah, we recently, I know you will shake your head at me via the internet, but we recently lost a pacifier with my 2-year-old.
Good God.
Yeah, and so... And so I've thought about this a lot, in that I did the same thing I did with my older son, where I just made him a deal. I go, "Listen, I'll work out a little quid pro quo here. You tell me what you want and you give me all the passies." my older son asked for a cookie, and I said, I'll give you 3 cookies. And he's like, great deal. Never had an issue, never a problem. The younger one said, I want a toy. So we went to Target. He picked out like a $15 toy, something like that. Yep. I said, great. We gathered up the passies. He never really – he asked for it that night at bedtime. I got frustrated because my wife gave it to him at his nap time and then was waiting to not give it to him at bedtime. And I was like, why would you do that? The nap time is the easy time for us right. to manage. That's when we are awake and he is sleepy. And that would be that's the time to push. And so she was like, oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't thinking, you know, yada, yada, yada. But now it's, I think, because that's the only variable, is that it started this new thing where he has a list of demands that he's asking for before he'll go to sleep. Whereas before, he was the one that I did not mess up. I messed up my older son where I started holding him and letting him fall right. asleep in my arms when he was an infant because I liked it. And then with this one, because I knew I'd made the mistake, I put him in there wide awake in the crib, and he would always just go to sleep on his own. No problems, right. nothing. And then now he gets up, and he asks for these things, and I try to explain to my wife. I say, listen, knock it off. No more, no more. He's going to cry a few nights, but eventually when he knows that crying isn't going to get him what he wants, he'll just go to sleep because he's Bingo. Got another option.
Bingo!
And it's, you know, she's very much, I think because she's a mom, she's wired to take that path of least resistance, kind of. And that's why you have dads in the world where you're supposed to be the one who goes, no, knock it off. You know, that's to create a balance, I guess. I don't know, but...
Well, when you have the third child, Justin.
That's not going to happen. If that does, that's a divorce.
All right. I tell all of my patients, honestly, and I put it in big, bold letters at the six-month visit. I give a little handout, and I just say, at 6 months, this is the time tonight, throw out the pacifiers. Put them at the bottom of the garbage can. Bring the garbage can down to the street so that you're not tempted to go there at 2 in the morning. Yeah. And just get them out of the house at 6 months. Kids lose the instinctual desire to suck at 6 months. It's the easiest time to get rid of it. And if you throw them all out at 6 months and you deal with 1 or 2 nights of crying, it's a lot easier than bargaining with them right. when they're 2. So
absolutely. I ran into you too late.
Complete control over that. They just have to throw them out when it's the right time to throw them out, which is around 6 months.
And if you have a child that is 4 or 5 months right now and you're listening to this, I'm telling you, even me listening to it goes, yeah, I wish I would have known Dr. J then. I wish
you
I would
have. You know how sad it is when the 4-year-olds are having like a baby sister and the 4-year-old is still using a pacifier. And I have to tell the 4-year-old that, you know, they only make so many pacifiers. And if you're still using one at 4, we got nothing for your baby, for your baby sister.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got to bring them all here so we can recycle them, sterilize them, so your baby will have a pacifier to suck on. And they come in with little, you know, boxes wrapped with bows, and it's got like 5 pacifiers. I have a box in my office of used pacifiers, okay? I just throw them all in the box there. They bring them into me in Ziploc bags.
And then you get rid of them.
And then I get rid of them.
Nice.
I don't want to be involved, quite frankly, but, yeah. you know.
Well, it's a bonus service that I think that you do, and we all appreciate you for it.
It's like a gazelle for recycling your cell phones.
Yeah. go sell it or what is that?
And
yeah,
there's
right.
no patch. There's no Binky patch
no?
to make it a little easier on them. Someday, you got to throw the freaking pacifiers
right.
away.
Well,
so
that's
the easiest time to do it is when they're still little
yep.
and they can't manipulate you.
That's the genius part of what you're saying. And the nail in the coffin is that at 6 months, you're saying they've lost the desire to suck, to right. satisfy, to satiate anything. So therefore, there is no need for it. It is
exactly.
only it is only part of a routine.
The day, nobody, you know. Then parents say, "Well, why is my child not speaking?" Well, because they've got a pacifier in their mouth 24 hours a day.
Just out of curiosity, is there anything that is same like with potty training and stuff like that? It's like. Is there a time frame for that where it's like, you know what I mean? That parents have gotten involved and mucked it up, and then we all do that thing where we say, well, every child is different. You know?
I do think it is a matter of timing. Okay. Every kid is a little different, but I think girls potty train between 2 and 3, and boys it's more 2.5 and 3.5. And as long as it's happening in that time frame, it's probably normal. But, you know, there are parents that want to start potty training at 18 months. And, you know, if you're going to bring a kid to the bathroom and put them on the potty every hour, well, the kid may pee, but they ain't potty trained. You're potty trained to bring them every hour. So, and I find that parents get frustrated if it doesn't work right away, but you know, if the kid is resistant at all, you're not going to get anywhere. And when they're ready, it takes 4 or 5 days, literally.
Right.
So you can wait until the timing is right and it'll take 4 or 5 days, or you can, you know, get frustrated and aggravated and have 2 months of stress and aggravation. And then when the kid finally has had enough of the entertainment of watching you be stressed and aggravated, they do it in 4 to 5 days.
That's what I was going to ask you, is that, because I noticed with Jacob, my older son, that we waited, and I think he was getting like closer to 3.5, almost 4. Yeah. And we were like, "Gh." And then he just said one day, he said something like, he's a big boy. And my wife was like, well, you're kind of a big boy. You still wear diapers, so you're not really a big boy. And he was doing a lot of complaining about how he didn't like that he had to smell the poop or whatever when we were changing his diaper. And every time we did it, we just said, well, if you start going on the bathroom and telling me before you crap in the diaper, then it just goes in there. Like, then you don't smell it. I go, think about how I have to deal wiping it and all this. That's what I kept explaining to him. Well, this one day, my wife just said, well, you know, you're not really a big boy because you wear diapers. He's like, well, then no more diapers. And she's like, okay. He didn't wet the bed. He didn't do any of that stuff. We went cold turkey on the diapers and never an issue. He's had a few accidents, but not in the last, year, but immediately following. But it was like, I was like, oh, like, and to me, I felt like, well, that's what it is. You just wait till the kid is like, okay, I'm done with this. Obviously, within reason, you have to be there to guide and not just let nature take its course. And he's 7 years old and still wears a diaper.
I haven't sent a kid to kindergarten in my practice yet with diapers. So,
right, exactly.
You know, I know it's possible. Oh, and just to kind of bring things full circle, John Rosemond also has his toilet training technique for when, you know, you're kind of at your wit's end and nothing works is called $75 and naked. and basically the kid's naked for a couple of days and the $75 is to clean the furniture and the carpeting when he's potty trained. So it also takes about 5 days. So,
well, because I think that somebody was telling me that in China they don't even really use diapers at all, and that's why the kids potty train even faster there. But I think it's because they can't afford it in the landfills or something, but that could be a wives' tale. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. The ones that come from China that get adopted have diapers, so.
Yeah. See, well, we ruin them. We westernize them.
I have a comedian friend whose wife is Portuguese, and starting at 9 months, she would take the kid's diaper off, hold him over the toilet, and eventually the kid kind of got the hang of going on the toilet. Not on the toilet, hovering over it.
Right.
You know, I don't know now that he's older if they still suspend him above the toilet. But
to make it to
again,
it.
You can get a kid to, you know, they're trainable. But is that trained, potty trained? I don't know.
Yeah. To me, I would agree with what you're saying, is that it's when the kid could go in there and go, I got to go to the bathroom, and tell you in advance, and you got to put them on the toilet, or can go in there by themselves. Like that to me is the trick. That's nailed it.
And the other thing that might buy you that extra half hour or hour of sleep in the morning is when my kids were little, I taught them what a 7 looked like and bought them each a digital clock. Mm-hmm. And I said, you can get up whenever the hell you want, but you don't wake up daddy until the first number on the clock is a 7. And this is what a 7 looks like.
Yeah, that's what we started doing with I was just telling you about how he's getting up at like 6. If he sleeps till 7, and right when the sun is up, he's just in a much better mood.
Yeah.
And I remember, because I would obviously prefer he sleeps until 7:30, 7:45. But I remember you telling me that, well, they're going to get up at sunup. That's just kind of like almost a biological thing at that point. So we have the rule. It's like if you look out your window and it's dark outside, you get your butt back in bed. And when he still comes out, we say, remember, it's dark outside. And usually that'll work and he'll go back when my wife doesn't cave because she thinks it's the easier way to go. But a friend of mine, I think, had the most brilliant idea was that he had a light, like a small light in his kid's room that he put on a timer. And he had a time when it went off and a time when it would come back on. And so the idea was he made it into a game where the kid was supposed to try to fall asleep before the light went off. And then if he woke up and the light wasn't on, it wasn't time to get up. He was supposed to stay in bed. And then if the light was on, then he can get out of bed and come on in whenever he wanted.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I like that a lot.
Smart. It's like
I may add that to my repertoire.
It's like its own little sun up, sun down thing or whatever.
Yep, it's perfect. So. It's perfect.
Well, that was our show. Thank you so much. I had one more quick question. That I know that we've talked a lot about flu shots and everything, and I want to say that there were two parts of like a flu season. Like there was an early part of the year and then a latter part of the year. Am I crazy on that?
Nope, you're right. We didn't. I honestly, I didn't see much flu again this year until like the middle of January. So yeah, it was late this year. If there were scattered cases early on, they snuck by me. But January and February have been the months. So we're more or less done giving flu shots now. Because new 6-month-old babies that are coming in that haven't been immunized yet are getting a flu shot in February. But I have to order next fall's flu shots next month. So as soon as I finish giving them, I got to start counting up doses to give next August through February. And I got to order doses for babies that aren't even born yet. So it's always fun. It used to be we gave 125 flu vaccines to the kids in the practice that had underlying illnesses. And for the last 10 years, we've been having to give it to everybody more or less. So I'd say, you know, out of 5,000 patients, we probably give 3,500 flu vaccines.
And that, so it isn't a thing where you need to get a flu shot twice a year. You get it in
just
like
once,
September, October, a part of the year, and then you're good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Depending on when your doctor gives it.
And then it changes the next year. But yeah, and God forbid we get any kind of a pig or bird flu scare. That gets everybody in an uproar.
They get all in a tizzy and upset.
Oh, I'm telling you, it's craziness. I actually had fathers almost come to blows in my waiting room in 2009 during the whole bird flu thing. And I'm like in there trying to break up the fight saying, "This is a pediatrician's office, for Christ's sake."
It's not Little League baseball, you assholes.
We have vaccines for everyone.
Hilarious. That's awesome. All right. Well, thank you again, Dr. J. If you would like to send your question in for Dr. J, send it in to questions@thedadpodcast.com. And we will talk to J, probably Dr. J, maybe in like a month and a half, somewhere around there. We're going to do it more regular because I'm off the roads quite significantly. And you and I could talk about that more off air because the listeners have heard me beat it to death. But anyway,
yeah, I would love to hear your road stories. That's the one thing I don't get out of being a comedian, as I get like one or two road trips a year. That's it. So I'm not a road warrior, unless you count Rhode Island, Connecticut, and Massachusetts. Those are the roads I travel.
It's good enough.
Snow covered roads I travel.
See, it's much harder than any road I travel.
Yeah, we had a big storm, like 12 inches on Saturday. Usually takes me 45 minutes to get to New Haven. It took me 2 goddamn hours to go down and feature for $100.
Oh.
But I risked it. I risked life and limb for it.
Oh, man. I could only imagine. Good times.
Of course, I get there and they say, "Oh, the checks, we'll mail them out Monday."
You sons of bitches.
What are you going to do? If I would have spent it at a titty bar on the ride home, I'd rather it come in the mail during the week.
Perfect. Well, you can like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/dadpodcast. Follow the show on Twitter @dadpodcast. Me @JustinWorsham. There's a link on thedadpodcast.com where you could pick up Dr. J's stand-up special via DVD. It's a digital download that you can get from there. So please do that. It's under the links tab. And I think that's it. I always ask you, are you on the Twitter or anything like that, Dr. J? You want to throw anything
out
there?
But I don't tend to tweet much.
Okay.
Now,
all right, good.
Now just Facebook, Dr. J Sute and standuppediatrician.com. That's the way to find me.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Dr. J. On behalf of my friend, Dr. J, this is Justin Worsham saying stay frosty.